Dave Emery here. This is, for the record, program number 880, the ISIS file, subtitled Myth of the Moderates. This is being recorded on December 11th of 2015. We are winding down to something very close to the end of the year, and the way things are going, it may be the end of the year, maybe the end of the world. I don't think we have ever been closer to a third world war than we are right now. And in point of fact, I think that in reality, a third world war is actually underway. In a number of shows, most recently, for the record, 878, and for the record, 879, I have talked about the Earth Island Boogie. That really is a giant covert operation with an overt operation component, and it really does represent something of a third world war. Now, when I talk about the Earth Island, what we are talking about is also called the World Island, is a giant stretch of land that runs from the Straits of Gibraltar all the way across Europe, the Middle East, Russia, China, India. It encompasses most of the world's landmass, most of the world's population, most of the world's natural resources, including fossil fuels, oil, coal, and natural gas in particular. And across the middle of that stretch of land, the Earth Island, is a vast stretch of Muslim, or an area inhabited by Muslim peoples of one persuasion or another, some Shiite, some Sunni. And we have been talking about what I have called the Earth Island Boogie, a series of Machiavellian political maneuvers resulting, or really involving, covert operations, the use of, on the one hand, weaponized religion, specifically Muslim jihadists as combatants. And we are also looking at what is, in effect, a proxy, well, I couldn't call it a civil war, although in Syria it is a civil war, but really a proxy war between Russia and, to a lesser extent, China and the West. We have Russia and, to an extent, China backing the Shiite forces in the Middle East, basically, in effect, using them to shield their southern flank, or in China's case, their western flank, from what is actually a covert operation using Sunni combatants, and specifically forces such as Al-Qaeda, and as we will see, the Islamic State, as proxy warriors in order to carve up both Russia and China, or to carve away large blocks of their territory, and specifically the Caucasus in Russia and Xinjiang province in China, which both are rich in fossil fuels. Both also have large Muslim populations, which, in addition to being to having an affinity with Sunni Muslims, are also, in many cases, Turkophone as well. That is to say, they are Turkic peoples, and as such have been the focal point of neo-Ottoman activism on the part of Turkey. And for the record, 878 and in 879, we took a look at the confluence between Islamism and also Muslim Brotherhood-based Islamism and the pan-Turkist movement. In addition to a proxy war aimed on the side of the West at using Sunni jihadists such as Al-Qaeda, the Al-Qaeda affiliate in Iraq, which in Syria has been called the Nusra Front, other lesser-known groups, and beyond that, the Islamic State. We are also looking at, in addition to the proxy war, we are looking at the Muslim Brotherhood's corporatist economics. I think that the goals on the part of the transnational corporations, which dominate the West, and the underground Reich and the Bormann Capital Network, which, in my opinion, have a controlling, well, they control the effectively through stock holdings and also the powerful German corporations. They, in effect, control the transnational corporate community. The imposition of corporatist economics, courtesy of the Muslim Brotherhood, in the vast Islamic world, and in addition to the Earth Island, the Muslim population represents something like 1+ billion, over a billion people. They are a large chunk of the world's population. And I think that the transnational corporations intend that part of the world to manifest corporatist economics. The grinding social inequalities in those areas are stirring the populations, the badly oppressed populations in many of the Muslim countries, to a restive state. And I think that instead of having a socialist revolution or a populist revolution in those areas, in effect, those restive populations are being handed a program that might be described as let them eat fascism, in this case, Islamic fascism, and instead of scapegoating Jews or blacks, or as is taking place in Europe and the United States, some of the very Muslims who are fleeing these conflicts, basically they are being told their anger is being focused on Westerners, Jews, Christians, and others. I think, again, that the world has never been closer to a third world war. It's one of the reasons that I am undertaking this admittedly ambitious line of inquiry. I can also appreciate that the analysis is altogether cumbersome for many people. It is not easy to do this in one-hour installments. Also, I want to recommend in the most emphatic fashion that listeners take advantage of the long article-length printed descriptions that I have put together, specifically because of the complicated nature of the focal point of the discussion, and also, frankly, the pedantic format that I am obliged to use. Because if one simply sits down and begins discoursing about these things off the top of one's head, people are basically going to roll their eyes and say, you know, good Lord, you know, you don't expect me to believe that. That's conspiracy theory, you know, blah, blah, blah. And sadly, I wish it were. But unfortunately, we have arrived at some very perilous and strange times. I've called the Earth Island Boogie the Earth Island Boogie because in addition to events in the Middle East and China, we are seeing a dovetailing of the Islamic fascism of the Muslim Brotherhood, the proxy war of Sunni versus Shiite Muslims in the Middle East, and the overlapping the pan-Turkish movement, that is dovetailing with events in Ukraine. And once again, we will be looking at the profound areas of overlap between the pan-Turkish elements in this Earth Island Boogie and the Muslim Brotherhood Islamist elements in this Earth Island Boogie with some of the OUNB fascists in Ukraine. In addition to this, the pan-Turkish Islamist elements and the OUNB elements in Ukraine, I want to stress that the Earth Island Boogie appears to be something of a series of gigantic covert operations. The war in Syria is a direct outgrowth of the Arab spring. And as we looked at in For the Record programs 733 through 737, and also in our For the Record 749, our last interview with John Loftus, the Arab Spring was basically a covert operation. It sprang in turn from WikiLeaks, which also gives every indication of being an underground Reich covert operation. Its many well-intentioned but painfully naive supporters notwithstanding. The WikiLeaks op, the Arab Spring op, the Orange Revolution, which set the stage for the Maidan coup, and the current bloody and threatening mess overtaking the Middle East and elsewhere are all basically part of the same gigantic covert operation. We will be doing more about this. We will be talking about the shoot down of the Russian fighter plane by a Turkish F-16, which appears to have been a deliberate ambush and an overt act of war. That, however, is going to have to wait. Again, I cannot emphasize strongly enough that listeners should use the written descriptions for the program. The material is way too complex for the relatively simplistic analysis that one can present, I should say, in 1 hour. So please use the written descriptions for the shows. There is material in the written descriptions that is not in the actual broadcast material per se. And also, there are links to many other things as well. So again, we're looking at operations all across the Earth Island, from Ukraine through the Middle East to China. It involves Muslim Brotherhood-based Islamic fascists on the part of the West, Saudi Arabia and Turkey. And in turn, Shiite warriors are being used as proxies by Russia and China in an effort to defend their flank against this proxy war. Elements of Western intel, certainly CIA, almost certainly BND, are involved in this. And again, there is a series of ops from WikiLeaks to the Arab Spring to the Maidan coup, the Orange Revolution in 2004, are all part of the same gigantic operation. Also, and we will go into this in weeks to come, the profound effect of the ripples coming out from the Middle East are also affecting domestic politics in Europe and the U.S. in a big way. In For the Record 864, we visited with Peter Lavenda and spoke about the xenophobia that is overtaking Europe and the U.S. and how that in turn is manifesting a very explicit fascist agenda. However, more about that in weeks to come. We're going to begin by reviewing an article about elements of CIA supporting jihadists in Syria with the support of the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood, Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. This article is from the New York Times of June 21st, 2012. It's by Eric Schmidt, S-C-H-M-I-T-T. CIA is said to aid in steering arms to Syrian opposition. It reads as in part as follows. A small number of CIA officers are operating secretly in southern Turkey, helping allies decide which Syrian opposition fighters across the border will receive arms to fight the Syrian government, according to U.S. officials and Arab intelligence officers. The weapons, including automatic rifles, rocket-propelled grenades, ammunition, and some anti-tank weapons, are being funneled mostly across the Turkish border by way of a shadowy network of intermediaries, including Syria's Muslim Brotherhood, and paid for by Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar, the officials said.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. Long article-length descriptions of the For the Record programs are available at spitfirelist.com, also featuring information that wasn't in the original program due to the limitations of time.
Again, a small number of CIA officers, as described in the New York Times, are aiding combatant forces in Syria from southern Turkey in combination with the Syrian Muslim Brotherhood and Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar. Reviewing also, as we launch into a discussion of ISIS per se, and as I speak on December 11th of 2015, the ISIS attack in Paris, the second major terrorist incident in Paris, in France this year, and also the San Bernardino attacks, which are certainly being linked to ISIS, although they apparently, the apparent perpetrators were radicalized before ISIS came into being. I think that is past the point academic, because as we're going to see, there really are no moderates in the Syrian war, and past the point, the distinctions between the Nusra Front, which is basically Al-Qaeda in Iraq, when it goes into Syria, and there are strong networks in Iraq for the combatants in Syria and vice versa, and ISIS, the distinctions are past the point altogether academic. In For the Record Program 879, we took a look at the fact that in the part of Syria immediately adjoining Turkey, many of the Turkmen militia that are linked to the Grey Wolves and Pan-Turkism are also in an area where al-Nusra Front fighters have joined with ISIS. And to an extent, distinguishing between those is academic. So whether the apparent perps in San Bernardino were ISIS per se, apparently the female apparent perpetrator put up a Facebook post declaring allegiance to ISIS. I think the distinction between Al-Qaeda, ISIS, and the various Muslim Brotherhood jihadists, Muslim Brotherhood-derived jihadists in Syria is frankly an academic consideration, and there really are no moderates. We're going to review an article from Global Muslim Brotherhood Daily Watch from October 21st of 2014. Featured, Yousef Karadawi says ISIS leader was once Muslim Brotherhood. First English translation of statement. The Global Muslim Brotherhood Daily Watch has discovered what appears to be the first English translation of the video in which Global Muslim Brotherhood leader Yousef Karadawi can be seen referring to what is almost certainly Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi and explaining that he was once a member of the Muslim Brotherhood. Skipping down, it would appear that al-Baghdadi joins the ranks of other infamous terrorist leaders such as Ayman al-Zawahiri, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and Khalid Meshalal, I would also add a fellow by the name of Osama bin Laden, who was recruited by Abdullah Azzam, who once belonged to the Muslim Brotherhood, before going on to joining leading terrorist organizations. That, I think that's a very important point, and yet I think that the analysis presented here by Global Muslim Brotherhood Daily Watch is somewhat flawed in that it does not give the Muslim Brotherhood and the Islamic fascists credit for being able to use plausible deniability. Western conspirators of various kinds have long used plausible deniability to shield their more important and sensitive political connections. I think it really does not occur to many of them that Muslims are just as capable of doing the same thing. So with ISIS so much in the news and dominating political debate and activity in Europe and the U.S., I think it is time to take a look at the genesis of this particular organization. And the evidence is rather strong and very disturbing that, in fact, ISIS is the direct product of the use of Islamists, in this case, Muslim Brotherhood connected Sunni combatants as proxy warriors. In our visits with Peter Lavende in, for the record, 538 through 547, we took a look at the use of weaponized Islam. We took a look at the use of weaponized religion in general, but specifically we took a look at the use of weaponized Islam and the Western origin of the genesis of Islam and Muslims as proxy warriors. Specifically, a German imperialist, actually an archaeologist by trade, but a fellow who was very closely affiliated with the power elite in the Kaiser's Germany, a fellow named Max von Oppenheim, crafted the very first use of global jihad as proxy warriors for Imperial Germany against France, Britain, and Russia. That same basic tactic was used by the U.S. and the West in the Cold War. The Muslim Brotherhood, an Islamic fascist organization that was alive with the Axis in World War II, then jumped to Western intelligence, the CIA in particular, and they were used as anti-communist cadre to suppress socialists in the Arab and Muslim world. And then most prominently, they were used against the Soviet Union very successfully in the Afghan War of the 1980s. As we looked at in our discussions with Elizabeth Gould and Paul Fitzgerald, the person who crafted that particular gambit, the most recent use of jihadis as proxy warriors, was Zbigniew Brzezinski, Jimmy Carter's national security advisor. That same basic paradigm appears to have been employed once again, and we will be talking about that in this discussion. So again, what we're talking about here is, in effect, the Western genesis of ISIS. It appears to be yet another example of the transnational corporations and their allied political and national security elites using a radical political movement as a proxy force against their perceived enemies. If some of this appears to be a bit wacky or a little hard to grasp, just bear in mind the many programs and also the books available for download on the Spitfire website discussing Western financing of fascism prior to and during World War II. Basically, fascism was seen as a pro-corporatist, anti-Soviet fighting force by the West and by power elites in the U.S., Britain, and France, as well as Germany and Japan. Ultimately, however, the German and Japanese fascists had their own agenda. They turned out to be something of a Frankenstein's monster. And whereas they were seen as very useful hitmen against Russia and the growing communist movement in China, ultimately they had their own agendas, and they wound up waging war and an unsuccessful war, at least militarily, of conquest against some of the countries that had helped to create them in the first place. Something very similar took place with regard to the Afghan jihadis. They wound up morphing into Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, and the U.S., among other countries, has been engaged against them ever since. Something very similar appears to have happened in the Middle East. ISIS appears to be the direct outgrowth of Western intelligence-backed covert operations using Turkey and Saudi Arabia and Qatar. And ultimately, they were looking to get rid of Bashar Assad in Syria. They were used as proxies against the Shia in Syria. However, they also, as was forecast ominously, in a declassified DIA document, they ultimately threatened and subverted the territorial integrity of Iraq as well. They now have turned on the West, just as ultimately Japan and Germany began attacking some of the very countries whose corporate elites had financed them in the first place. Something very similar appears to have taken place with regard to ISIS. We're going to begin with several articles actually dealing with a declassified DIA document from August of 2012. GermanForeignPolicy.com that feeds along the lower right-hand side of the front page of the SpitfireList.com website. From May 28th of 2015, the jihad's usefulness to, it reads in part, a recently declassified memo of the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, or DIA, reveals that the West had supported the creation of the Islamic State, or IS. Skipping down, after discussing the use of jihadists as proxies against the Soviet Union and also against Shiite Iran. I believe that that is part of the proxy war that in turn could very easily and in fact maybe morphing into World War III. The article continues, skipping down. The fact that the West is following this same strategy in the war in Syria has been confirmed in the memo dating from August of 2012 from the U.S. DIA, or Defense Intelligence Agency, and made public last week. According to the memo, the creation of a Salafist principality, unquote, in eastern Syria was seen as advantageous to deprive the Shiite expansion, unquote, emanating from Iran in its strategic depth, unquote, in Syria. The Islamic State, or IS, in fact, has evolved from that Salafist principality. And skipping down. In the summer of 2014, Western countries found themselves compelled to militarily intervene against ISIS, which was gathering strength. This is the Islamic State the West had paternalistically watched taking its first steps in the struggle against the government of President Assad, their common enemy. Even this has not put an end to the West's use of jihadists. Most recently, the U.S.-led anti-IS coalition stood by watching as IS drove Syrian government troops out of Palmyra, a strategically important city, a welcome support in the war on President Assad's government. According to reports, Saudi Arabia and Turkey have, quote, again been closely collaborating since March. And that document has now been declassified, and I'm going to read some sections of that. There are some screenshots of key areas of key sections of that document. GermanForeignPolicy.com published excerpts of that document under the title of A Salafist Principality. This from May 27th of 2015. In August of 2012, the U.S. Defense Intelligence Agency, or DIA, mentioned a possible Salafist principality in eastern Syria and a possible foundation of an Islamic State. Skipping down. The Salafists, the Muslim Brotherhood, and Al-Qaeda in Iraq are the major driving forces behind the insurgency in Syria. The West, Gulf countries, and Turkey support the opposition, parenthetically to Bashar Assad, while Russia, China, and Iran support the regime. Then says, notes that the AQI stands for Al-Qaeda in Iraq. AQI is familiar with Syria. AQI trained in Syria and then infiltrated into Iraq. AQI supported the Syrian opposition from the beginning, both ideologically and through the media.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. You can subscribe to the comments posted on the SpitfireList.com website, most of them by a brilliant contributing editor who uses the moniker Terra Fractal. specializing, but by no means exclusively, in economic and financial matters.
Skipping down. AQI had major pockets and bases on both sides of the border to facilitate the flow of material and recruits. There was a regression of AQI in the western provinces of Iraq during the years 2009 and 2010. However, after the rise of the insurgency in Syria, the religious and tribal powers in the regions began to sympathize with the sectarian uprising. This sympathy appeared in Friday prayer sermons, which called for volunteers to support the Sunnis in Syria. And again, I'm reading some excerpts from a Defense Intelligence Agency document from 2012. Continuing. If the situation unravels, there is the possibility of establishing a declared or undeclared Salafist principality in eastern Syria, Hasaka and Deir Zor, and this is exactly what the supporting powers to the opposition want in order to isolate the Syrian regime, which is considered to be the strategic depth of the Shia expansion by Iraq and Iran. Once again, this is absolutely crucial. If the situation unravels, there is the possibility of establishing a declared or undeclared Salafist principality in eastern Syria, Hasaka, and Deir Zor, and this is exactly what the supporting powers to Bashar Assad want in order to isolate the Syrian regime, which is considered to be the strategic depth of the Shia expansion. Skipping down. This creates the ideal atmosphere for AQI, that's Al-Qaeda in Iraq, to return to its old pockets in Mosul and Ramadi, and will provide a renewed momentum under the presumption of unifying the jihad among Sunni Iraq and Syria and the rest of the Sunnis in the Arab world against what it considers one enemy, the dissenters. ISI, the Islamic State in Iraq, could also declare an Islamic State through its union with other terrorist organizations in Iraq and Syria, which will create grave danger in regards to unifying Iraq and the protection of its territory. The renewing facilitation of terrorist elements from all over the Arab world entering into the Iraqi arena. That is item number three. So again, what they are talking about is the covert operation that was referred to in the 6/21/2012 Eric Schmidt article from the New York Times. There are elements of CIA backing this, and Turkey, Saudi Arabia, and Qatar are supporting Sunni jihadists, including AQI, in Syria. What happened was they began expanding into Iraq. They are now expanding elsewhere and thereby threatening the, quote, gains, unquote, by the U.S. military adventure in Iraq. And again, gains belongs in quotes. That basically upset the entire apple cart. So again, what we are seeing is a covert operation, part of the Earth Island Boogie and part of the proxy war between Sunni jihadists backed by Turkey, Saudi Arabia, Qatar, and elements of Western intel, including elements of CIA. They supported the establishment of a Salafist principality in eastern Syria that became the Islamic State when it began expanding into Iraq. They said, oops, this wasn't what we had in mind. Now they are attacking the West. I think the underground Reich and the transnational corporate community are perfectly satisfied with what is taking place because it is driving the political spectrum to the right, not only in Europe and also in the U.S., but also in the Muslim world as well. The grinding social inequality deriving from the massive economic inequality in that area. The rage that the population is experiencing is being deflected onto the infidels, and in the case of the Sunnis, onto the Shia as well. It is, in that case, a classic manifestation of fascism, albeit Islamic fascism. Bear in mind the corporatist economic agenda of the Muslim Brotherhood that we have spoken about so many times, including in, for the record, 790 and 830. We've spoken about it many times indeed. We also talked about it most recently in 862. So rather like the transnational corporations funding of Japanese and German fascism in World War II, which got out of hand, and American service personnel, Allied service personnel, began fighting in a very bloody war against them, just as happened with the proxy jihadists used against the Soviets in Afghanistan. They morphed into Al-Qaeda and the Taliban, and once again, American service personnel were fighting against them. The same thing has happened now in Syria as well. And elements of that jihadist milieu are getting support from Western intel, including CIA. It's particularly grotesque that what was known as Al-Qaeda in Iraq, and in Syria, it's called the Nusra Front, are being backed by the same, basically the usual suspects, Turkey, Saudi Arabia in particular, Qatar, and other wealthy Sunni elites in the Middle East. The 3rd Battalion of the 5th Marine Regiment, the Dark Horse Regiment, fought a very bloody engagement in Fallujah in the last decade against Al-Qaeda in Iraq. They took heavy casualties. It was a fierce and very trying engagement. Also, there were a huge number of civilian casualties. Now we're seeing that same element being used as proxy jihadists, and it appears to have once again spread out of control. It's like a control burn in forestry that then expands and produces a wider forest fire. Vice President Biden actually inadvertently alluded to this dynamic. The Washington Post of October 6th of 2014 has an article by Adam Taylor, T-A-Y-L-O-R. Behind Biden's gaffe lie real concerns about the West's role in the rise of the Islamic State. This reads in part, skipping down, our allies, this is Joe Biden, the vice president speaking here, our allies in the region were our largest problem in Syria. The Turks were great friends, and I have a great relationship with Erdogan, whom I just spent a lot of time with, as well as the Saudis, the Emirates, etc. What were they doing? They were so determined to take down Assad and essentially have a proxy Sunni-Shia war. What did they do? They poured hundreds of millions of dollars and tens of tons of weapons into anyone who would fight against Assad, except the people who were being supplied were al-Nusra and al-Qaeda and the extremist elements of jihadis who were coming from other parts of the world. Now, you think I'm exaggerating? Take a look. Where did all of this go? So now that's happening all of a sudden. Everybody is awakened because this outfit called ISIL, which was al-Qaeda in Iraq, when they were essentially thrown out of Iraq, found open space and territory in eastern Syria, and they worked with al-Nusra, and we declared a terrorist group, who we declared a terrorist group early on. And we could not convince our colleagues to stop supplying them. So what happened? I would note here in passing that elements of CIA are backing this same dynamic. Also, almost certainly, BND as well. Some commentators have faulted Biden for equating ISIL or ISIS with al-Qaeda in Iraq and with al-Nusra. Basically, they are pretty much the same thing, although there are some divisions between some elements. Many of the al-Nusra and al-Qaeda fighters have gone over to ISIS because, indeed, they have basically the same backers. This is not altogether dissimilar from what happened in World War II as well. A remarkable article appeared in a blog, and this concerns the chief of Turkish intelligence, analyzing basically what took place and what has taken place. And in effect, we are seeing the chief of Turkish intelligence expressing support for ISIS and encouraging the West to do the same thing. If that sounds like an exaggeration, this is from AWD News of October 18th of 2015. Turkish intelligence chief: Putin's intervention in Syria is against Islam and international law. ISIS is a reality, and we are optimistic about the future. Again, this is coming from Hakan Fidan, H-A-K-A-N-F-I-D-A-N. I'm probably mispronouncing that. He is the chief of Turkish intelligence. Here is what he has had to say. Hakan Fidan, the head of Turkey's National Intelligence Organization, known by the MIT acronym, has drawn a lot of attention and criticism for his controversial comments about ISIS. Mr. Hakan Fidan, the Turkish president's staunchest ally, condemned Russian military intervention in Syria, accusing Moscow of trying to smother, unquote, Syria's Islamist revolution, and called it a serious breach of UN law. Quote, ISIS is a reality, and we have to accept that we cannot eradicate a well-organized and popular establishment such as the Islamic State. Therefore, I urge my Western colleagues to revise their mindset about Islamic political currents, put aside their cynical mentality, and thwart Vladimir Putin's plans to crush Syrian Islamist revolutionaries. Anadolu News Agency quoted Mr. Fidan as saying. Fidan further added that in order to deal with the vast number of foreign jihadists craving to travel to Syria, it is imperative that ISIS must set up a consulate or at least a political office in Istanbul. Typically, Turkey is a NATO country. One more time. Fidan further added that in order to deal with the vast number of foreign jihadists craving to travel to Syria, it is imperative that ISIS must set up a consulate or at least a political office in Istanbul. He underlined that it is Turkey's firm belief to provide medical care for all injured people fleeing Russian ruthless airstrikes, regardless of their political or religious affiliations. Recently, as the fierce clashes between Russian army and ISIS terrorists raging across war-torn Syria, countless numbers of ISIS-injured fighters enter the Turkish territory and are being admitted to military hospitals, namely those in Hatay province. Again, he's talking about basically ISIS fighters being given medical attention in Turkey. Skipping down. Emil Emile Hokayam, H-O-K-A-Y-E-M, a Washington-based Middle East analyst, said that Turkey's Erdogan and his oil-rich Arab allies have dual agendas in the war on terror, and as a matter of fact, they are supplying the Islamist militants with weapons and money. Thus, Russian intervention is considered a devastating setback for their efforts to overthrow Syrian President Bashar Assad. Hokayem, who was speaking via Skype from Washington, D.C., highlighted the danger of Turkish-backed terrorist groups and added that what is happening in Syria cannot be categorized as a genuine and popular revolution against dictatorship, but rather it is a chaos orchestrated by Erdogan, who is dreaming of reviving his ancestors' infamous Ottoman Empire, a.k.a. the Neo-Ottoman or Pan-Turkist movement.
You're listening to Dave Emery's For the Record. All of Dave Emery's 36 years of work is available for download on the SpitfireList.com website. The site includes many articles not included in the programs, as well as a small library of old anti-fascist books. All of the material on the website is available for free. Sister station WFMU is podcasting the For the Record programs. To subscribe to the podcast, use the link at the top of the description for this program or on the front page.
What we're going to do now is to sort of dolly the camera out, and we're going to be taking a look at the Earth Island Boogie, and specifically the use of these same combatant forces against Russia in the Caucasus and also against Russia in Ukraine as well. We're going to revisit briefly with Elizabeth Gould and a statement from Zbigniew Brzezinski, who first crafted the use of Islamists to be used against the Soviet Union in Afghanistan. This is from For the Record 872.
Here is another quote that we have on the attitude that these kinds of individuals have. The policy of guiding the evolution of Islam and of helping them against our adversaries worked marvelously well in Afghanistan against the Russians. The same doctrines can still be used to destabilize what remains of Russian power, and especially to counter the Chinese influence in Central Asia.
That began Elizabeth Gould from For the Record 872, and she was quoting Zbigniew Brzezinski. We're going to review an article we looked at in For the Record 773, dealing with the Boston Marathon bombing, which appears to have been blowback from the Western covert operation in Chechnya. This is an article from Foreign Policy Magazine from April 22nd of 2013, right after the Boston Marathon bombing. It is by J. M. Berger, B-E-R-G-E-R, called Boston's Jihadist Past. When Boston Marathon runners rounded the bend from Beacon Street last week, they were in the home stretch of the race. As they poured through the closed intersection, they ran past a nondescript address, 510 Commonwealth Avenue. The location was once home to an international support network that raised funds and recruited fighters for a jihadist insurgency against Russian rule over Chechnya, a region and a conflict that few of the runners had likely ever given any serious thought. Skipping down. During the 1980s and into the 1990s, Islamist foreign fighters operated robust recruiting and financing networks that supported Chechen jihadists from the U.S. and used them against Russia in Chechnya. And again, this is basically the Al-Qaeda organization having morphed into CAIR. Once again, this last sentence. During the 1980s and into the 1990s, Islamist foreign fighters operated robust recruiting and financing networks that supported Chechen jihadists from the U.S., and Boston was home to one of its most significant centers, a branch of the Al-Qaeda Center based in Brooklyn, which would later be rechristened CAIR International. Al-Qaeda sprang from the military jihad against the Soviets in Afghanistan. And a couple of points we have made recently, we have noted not only the Grey Wolf presence in Syria, right in the area that the Turkish F-16 shot down the Soviet fighter plane. The Grey Wolves have been used against China, supporting the Uyghurs in Xinjiang province, and also pan-Turkist elements in Crimea. The Crimean Tatars have been working with Pravi sector against Russia in Ukraine. I've also noted, or we have seen also, that ISIS-linked Chechen fighters have been working with Pravi sector in Ukraine as well. So dollying back and looking at the Earth Island Boogie, reviewing an article from Strategic Culture by Peter Lee from June 9th of 2014, The Durability of Ukrainian Fascism, and talking about the genesis of private sector. With apparently very good reason, the Russians have also accused UNA, UNSO fighters of participating in the anti-Russian side in Georgia and Chechnya. After formal Ukrainian independence, the militia elected Yuri Shukievich, the son of OUNB commander Roman Shukievich, as its leader, and set up a political arm which later became Pravi Sektor. So with Valentin Nalavichenko, the Pravi Sektor-linked chief of Ukrainian intelligence, having run the war there since the Maidan coup, it shouldn't be surprising to find Pravi Sektor and ISIS militants and Pravi Sektor and pan-Turkist-linked Crimean Tatars working together. And of the Chechnya, the Chechen ISIS link, from ABC News of August 25th of 2014, this is by James Gordon Meek, M-E-E-K, ISIS an incredible fighting force, special ops sources said. And this is talking about the extraordinary combat capabilities of ISIS. Skipping down. Where did ISIS learn such sophisticated military methods, shown clearly after the first shots were fired? Probably the Chechens, one of the U.S. officials said. A Chechen commander named Abu Omar al-Shishani, who officials say may have been killed in fighting near Mosul, is well known for commanding an international brigade within ISIS. Other Chechens have appeared within propaganda videos, including one commander who was killed on video by an artillery burst near his SUV in Syria. Earlier this year, ABC News reported on the secret history of U.S. Special Operations Forces experiences battling highly capable Chechen fighters along the Afghanistan-Pakistan border since 2001. In addition, for decades, Chechen separatists have waged asymmetric warfare against Russian forces for control of the Northern Caucasus. Once again, we have U.S. military personnel fighting against proxy warriors, proxy Islamist warriors that were generated by basically a CIA operation. And we're going to wrap things up by a look at recent elements from recent programs. An article from Fox News from November 25th of 2015, an article by Heather Nauert, N-A-U-E-R-T, ISIS parks its cash in Bitcoin, experts say. Yet another dark mark against Bitcoin. Just days after the hacker group Anonymous pledged to hunt down Islamic State members and launch cyber attacks against their accounts, a separate group of techies claims it has identified a key funding avenue for the terror network, Bitcoin accounts. Ghost Security Group, a collective of computer hacktivists, unquote, says it has located several Bitcoin accounts that ISIS uses to fund operations. There has also been a great deal of discussion about just what exactly the Edward Snowden, quote, disclosures, unquote, have had on counter-terror efforts and the use of encryption. I would note the following. This from the New York Times of November 17th of 2015, article by David E. Sanger, S-A-N-G-E-R, and Nicole Perlroth, P-E-R-L-R-O-T-H. Encrypted messaging apps face new scrutiny over possible role in attacks. Skipping down. Even if Apple and others in the U.S. were compelled to weaken the encryption in their services, American authorities still would have had no judicial authority over Telegram, the Berlin-based messaging service recently used by Islamic State terrorists to broadcast their communiques. Basically, ISIS is using a Berlin-based messaging service over which the U.S. has no influence. I would suggest that Germans who may be upset about the influx of refugees might want to consider doing something about that. And before we wrap things up, I want to review an element that we looked at in For the Record 737. And again, I want to stress, I know this is a very cumbersome analysis, an unwieldy analysis. It simply is not possible in the course of 1 hour or even a series of 1 hour programs to do justice to this huge Earth Island Boogie mega operation, which is also in addition to a proxy war. It is morphing into World War III, and it is the result of an ongoing series of covert operations. The war in Syria is an outgrowth of the Arab Spring. That, as we looked at in For the Record 733 through 737, is basically an operation. It also stemmed from the WikiLeaks operation as well. And a U.S. intelligence asset named Gene Sharp, S-H-A-R-P, his theoretical formulations were used by the street forces in the Arab Spring. Gene Sharp's theoretical pronouncements were also used in the Balkan Wars and also in the Orange Revolution in Ukraine in 2004, in which the OUNB forces grouped around Viktor Yushchenko, including Ekaterina Chumachenko, Roman Zvorich, Volodymyr Vyatrovich, and also Valentin Nalabichenko, all key OUNB-affiliated elements in the current Maidan government. They came to power as a result of the Orange Revolution. And Gene Sharp is a U.S. intelligence asset financed, by the way, by Peter Ackerman, Michael Milken's right-hand man. That's Michael Milken, the convicted felon and junk bond king, Mr. Greed is Good, as he said in the 1980s. His right-hand man, Peter Ackerman, finances Gene Sharp, whose political formulations were used in the Arab Spring as well as in the Orange Revolution and in the Balkans as well. Again, we're looking at an overlapping series of covert operations stretching all across the Earth Island, from Europe, the Ukraine, the Balkans, the Middle East, the Caucasus, and China, heavily overlapping the Pan-Turkish movement. So please use the descriptions for these programs because there is way, way, way too much information to adequately present, frankly, in a one-hour segment. And the description for the Record 880, including screenshots of that declassified DIA memorandum, will be available later this evening. This concludes For the Record program number 880, The ISIS File, subtitled The Myth of the Moderates. This is being recorded on December 11th of the year 2015. I'm Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.